So, Porky, it's time for episode 7
it sure is.
Of On The Record.
It
this
sure
is our podcast of our travels and adventures around America,
yep.
Which is proving quite successful.
It is proving very successful indeed. It is indeed.
Are you having any trouble with your microphone?
No, I'm not having any trouble here at all.
That's now, the main thing.
Our flights around America, let me tell you, the first flight that I was ever offered in America, which was quite, you know, different and the sort of thing you do in America, I didn't take. And I'll tell you why. It was a bit of a calculated plot.
Oh, yeah.
You see, what happened is, when I first met you in Costello, I was there on a sort of a flying visit.
Were you?
And the story from London was that, from the editor who was then Sir Larry Lamb.
Oh, yes.
And Sir Larry Lamb was a Yorkshireman. Mr. Barry.
This is a man who was rather fond of his wine.
Oh, very fond of his wine, yeah. Now, Mr. And so we go into the Savoy Hotel in London. You say, Mr. Barry, I'm sending you to America to work in the great city of New York.
Right.
It is the greatest break of your life. But you will have to bear with me, Mr. Barry, because we have a devilish plot. You are going to be sent out there, and the official story is that you're going out there on a briefing for a month.
Oh, yes.
I said, oh, well, that's great. I said,
there's always a plot, isn't there? I mean, they can never do anything straight, newspapers. Yeah. I mean, they can never just go, here's the new job you're going to have.
Yeah.
You always have to dislodge somebody, right?
Yeah. But he said, but I have been looking at the accounts, and that bloody man, Brian Vine, who was the bureau chief in New York and the colossus of journalism in America and the doyen of the New York press pack, right? Mm. He said he is spending too much money, Mr. Parry. He has a string of racehorses. He sends his children to private school and he has a house in the country. And I don't want any of that.
Mm.
So I'm sending you as a man of the people to take over from him.
But at a considerably reduced salary, presumably.
Oh, a considerably reduced salary. Mm. But Mr. Parry, Mr. Vine doesn't know that yet. And he won't know that, will he, Mr. Parry?
Was this was this before or after he'd appeared in New York Magazine?
Oh, this is after he'd appeared in New York Magazine.
That was his terrible mistake,
wasn't it? Yeah, he was leaning on the mantelpiece in his home with a monocle in his in his eye, bottles of champagne.
And there was
all
a big
around.
Union Jack somewhere,
big
wasn't
Union
it?
Jack and a picture of a string of his racehorses, which he had trained at Syracuse.
Yes.
Anyway, so I get over there and, you know, I'm aware of the vast wealth that Brian Vine has accumulated through his job. So anyway, the first weekend I'm there, you know, because I'm there on detachment, you know, allegedly for the summer.
Right.
I get an invitation from Brian Vine. This is the flight story.
Oh, yeah.
You know, dear boy, we must join us in my country house on Fire Island.
Ah, yes.
I said, okay, Brian, what's all that about then? He said, yes, he says, we'll get the old sea boat out and we'll fly off down Long Island Sound and get over to Fire Island and have a jolly weekend, you know, a few ships. I said, sorry, what do you mean by the sea boat? Got our own boat, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, we take off there in Long Island Sound, fly down.
Was this not the one that takes off from sort of down near Wall Street from the East River?
Well, he had his own boat. He was chartering his own seaplane.
It was a seaplane. That's what I'm saying. Did it not sit in the river?
I think it did.
And it flew people out to Fire Island. Yeah, it was a very bijou little boutique island, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. Mm. So anyway, I'm thinking, right, so they're getting rid of Brian Vine because he's spending too much money.
Yeah.
He's got his string of racehorses and he's got his sea boats flying me down to Fire Island. I thought, I can't do this.
No.
If I do this,
they might have thought like you got over to the wrong side.
Well, exactly. I've got native, you know, in the first 3 days there.
Yeah.
So I just said I didn't want to do it. I said, well, I've got to get to know the city. And I said, and to be perfectly honest, Brian, I'm very bad on small planes.
Yes.
I said, I just about got across here on the transatlantic aeroplane, but I can't do it. Well, if you insist, old boy, you know you're welcome any time. So he flew off to Fire Island, and I stayed in York to plot his demise.
Indeed, and you probably worked on the Sunday as well.
I worked on the Sunday.
Which he never did.
He never worked on the Sunday, and I got in there, and big Mike, what's his name, who was in there? Mike McKay?
Mike McGovern.
Mike McGovern.
Yeah.
And he was amazed to see
me. Who was another guy who used to get paid an extra shift.
That's
because
right.
nobody else wanted to work on a Sunday.
That's right, absolutely. And I said, no, Mike, from now on I'll be working on Sundays, you know. And he said, well, it's putting me out of work, man, you know, because he's a Chicago boy, wasn't he?
He was
Mike?
A Chicago boy, he was a great guy, Mike McGovern. He's still around, I believe.
I believe he is. He plays poker, I think, in Las Vegas for a living now.
Well, he does a lot of that. Funny enough, I met him in Glasgow when I was working there, because out of the blue, I got... I'm just sorry to interrupt your story, but out of the blue, I got a phone call from him when I was working for The Mirror.
Mm.
And he was on a boat, because he'd somehow become friends with some multimillionaire.
Yeah, well, he always did.
Yeah.
He always had a multimillionaire girlfriend somewhere.
Yeah, he did.
The world.
And the multimillionaire had told him that he was going on this boat trip around Europe on this sort of, you know, massive yacht.
Yes.
Which was like a sort of not quite Adnan Khashoggi style, but certainly quite big.
Yeah.
And he was the chef. And I'm like, oh, I didn't realise you were...
he was employed as a chef.
Yeah, the guy employed him as a chef.
Mike didn't know how to cook a hamburger.
Well, I don't think he did. No. But I mean, I think he fancied himself as a bit of a chef. It'd be like me doing it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but you're not really a chef. He's like, yeah, no, but don't tell him that.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't tell these guys, hey.
And he was... And he was, and he used to be, and he became the cult figure, didn't he? The shadow in Kinky Friedman's books, because Kinky Friedman was this guy who once ran for governor of Texas.
That's right.
But he also wrote a series of books, a detective series, in which Mike McGovern starred as the shadow.
That's right. I know.
So
amazing.
When people would meet him, they'd go, "Oh, you're the guy in Kinky's books."
Yes, that's right. Yeah, incredible. He was a terrible guy, and he, you know, he spoke like that Chicago guy in staccato voices. And the only other time that I ever saw Mike was when he and Steve Dunleavy were hitting each other with bar stools in Costello's because they used to have regular punch-ups.
They did.
Nasty, vicious punch-ups.
Oh, yeah.
Where they'd end up with teeth missing and
all that
kind of stuff.
Steve Dunleavy was quite a vicious guy.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
He's also still around, I believe.
Yeah, but he's got one leg, isn't he?
I think he had lost one of his legs, but he should have lost one of his legs earlier, of course, because he was famously the guy that was run over by a snowplow.
While he was having sex in the street.
Having sex in the street outside of Lanes.
Outside of Lanes in the snowdrift.
In a snowdrift.
Yeah.
Can't say I remember who the woman was.
No, exactly. Anyway, this is supposed to be about flights.
It is supposed to be about flights.
So your most menacing flight.
Well, my most menacing flight was actually when Boris Yeltsin came over and I was dispatched by the Sunday Times to go and sort of follow him around.
Yeah, yeah.
And I couldn't follow him around on the plane that he was on because I think he was being flown around not by the Russians.
Yeah.
But by, and this was before he took over from Gorbachev.
Yes.
So he was sort of the leader in waiting, if you like. And for some reason, he was attached to some senator or other who was from the Midwest who had met him and thought this guy would be great. So I caught up with him in Washington, D.C. Mm. But he was then going to Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah.
So I had to get a plane from
Wichita,
Washington.
Kansas.
Yeah.
Or isn't that people, the linesman?
The Wichita lineman.
Wichita
lineman. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, in London, they all used to call it Wichita.
Wichita.
Are you going to go to Wichita? And I'm like, no, it's Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah.
And so I had them book it for me, but I had to go on a proper plane to St. Louis and then change, right? So I got into St. Louis and went to get my boarding pass for the next plane to Wichita.
Yeah.
And as I was getting it, it said something like, 3A. And I was like, oh, great, have you upgraded me to first class?
Mm.
No, sir, there's only six rows of seats. And I went, oh, right, okay. I said, and is it a window or an aisle? And the guy said, it's both, sir.
Yeah.
And it was one of these planes.
Down each side.
Yeah, it was six down each side.
That's right, yeah.
And I got on the plane, and it was a tiny plane. It was smaller than the plane we got on to go with Rod Stewart.
Right.
And it was terrifying.
Was it a propeller plane as well?
It was a jet prop, as they called it.
Yeah, that's right.
So it had propellers.
Yeah, that's right.
But it
was
a jet, but it's had propellers. So, but as we were flying in, all I could see, I was looking down, and you used to see this a lot in the middle of America, was I could see the thunderstorms and lightning going around inside the clouds, right?
That's right, yeah.
And as we were coming in, we came in through these clouds, and the plane was dropping, and you know, there was terrible noise. Mm. And I thought, this is my Buddy Holly moment.
Yeah.
I thought, this is where I'm just going to die on a plane.
Peggy Sue.
Yeah.
Peggy
I really thought, Sue. This is the end.
Peggy.
Because it was Tornado Alley, right?
Yeah.
And it was tornado season. And in fact, when we got there, there was a massive tornado, and I got evacuated from the hotel.
Right.
Because there was a tornado alert.
Okay, but you survived.
I did survive, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You had to go into a tornado shelter.
Tornado shelter.
Which was pretty awful. And at one point, we woke up the next day, and the local car dealership had been hit by golf ball-sized hail.
Right.
And all the cars were completely smashed to pieces.
It's terrible.
Front windows were all gone.
Terrible.
Horrible.
Well, have we discussed wind shear at the wind shear problem? The wind shear problem.
Well,
because
it's not so much I cracked it, but it was in the 80s when they discovered what wind shear really was.
That's right.
After that crash at DFW, Dallas Fort Worth.
Well, I was flying into Jojo was a man in what's that town?
Tucson, Arizona.
I was flying into Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
And three times the pilot went in, and three times the plane.
Yeah.
You know when you're looking out the window and you can see the tarmac below you,
yes.
And then all of a sudden the tarmac turns to grass.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden the grass turns to the barrier at the edge of the airfield.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're thinking, and then the next moment, it's like Top Gun, you know. Yeah, somebody pulls the old thrusters back, you know.
Yeah.
We ain't got fuel for this, you know.
Right.
And we're going back up again, right. And we go over the mountain, come around again.
Yeah.
That happened three times.
Mm.
Three times, the plane was blown off course. And in the end, the pilot said, we can't do it, so we're going to Phoenix.
Well, the other problem was we flew so much in those days.
Exactly.
By law of averages, and in the 80s in particular, I got to be quite an expert on plane crashes because there was one like every month.
Yeah, there was.
You know. But the good news was that every time there was a plane crash, more and more people actually did survive them.
Yes, that's right.
But, you know, you just thought, on the law of averages, basically, one of the planes that I'm on, because I was on a plane a week pretty much for a while, one of them's going to crash. Unfortunately, they never actually did.
Well, at least one a year in New York came off the edge of the runway at LaGuardia into the sea.
Well, one of the things that used to scare me was when you were coming into LaGuardia, you would be flying over water right until the very last minute.
That's right,
And then as the plane touched down, it was as if that was the first bit of land you hit. So you didn't actually see the bit that it hit.
No, that's right. No,
and the same when you were taking off. And I always thought,
I totally agree.
I can't believe that one of these planes I'm on has just ditched itself into the sea.
I totally agree. Mm. I lived on a plane when I was following Walter Mondale around, right?
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the campaign trails. I did Bill Clinton a few years later, but the first one I ever did was Walter Mondale.
Right.
And, I mean, it's just dreadful. I think we flew to 8 different cities one day, and you just got on and got off this
plane.
I don't
know how people do that on a regular basis,
going up and down.
Yeah.
But what was great about it was that every time, they used to hold the press conferences in the aircraft hangars, didn't even bother going into town.
No.
You know, they're on the basis that...
we saw that with Trump, didn't we? He would land somewhere, and then have a bit of a rally in the airport, and then he'd take off again.
Then he'd take off again, I mean, in some of them they went into the town if the town was close by, because some of those airports are very, you know, in very small towns.
Yeah.
Oh, right next to the town, so to speak. But, I mean, in ones where it was... the thing is, you make lots of friends in the newspaper world because you're getting off the plane and the guys from the local paper say, you know, if you're in Springfield, Colorado or something like that, you know, oh, you know, I've got a deadline, man, and all that. And I said, I'll tell you what he's going to say because you'd heard it 4 times already.
Sure.
And so you'd said, here, oh, look, you can just give it to them. And they were terribly grateful because then we just got on the plane and flew somewhere else where somebody else wanted it, you know.
But because of it was prior to 9/11 as well, I mean, security at these airports are pretty... smaller ones.
Yes.
Well, it's non-existent.
Non-existent.
And I mean, a lot of them you could smoke in as well in those days too. But if you had to go outside for a cigarette, there was no problem like going through security, having a drink, and then saying to someone, actually, I'm just going to pop outside for a fag.
That's right.
And you go back out and walk actually past the people who were screening you to go in.
Yes.
And they'd be like, oh, you're going for a cigarette. Okay, see you later.
Yeah.
And then you come back. And it was just so lax, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Now, on the end of the Mondale campaign, right, which failed, obviously.
Yes.
The plane then reverted to being a public service plane again. So, so it had been chartered, you know, by the Mondale mob. But, I mean, the minute that you didn't want it anymore, they gave it back because of the cost of hiring aeroplanes.
Right, so they had to repaint it then.
No, I don't think they did. I think it was an American Airlines plane, and I just think it said Walter Mondale, you know, on, like, board slapped on the side, and they just took them off, you know what I mean?
Right.
But anyway, the point is that the cabin crew, mostly young ladies, very attractive young ladies, had been the same all the way through the, like, the 6 weeks we've been doing it.
Mm.
But I only stayed on it for about, I think I did a week at the start, a week at the end, you know what I mean? But it's still the same girl cabin crew.
Right.
Anyway... When it finished, it was down in we would have been down in Fort Worth, Dallas, I suppose, where American Airlines are based.
Yeah,
we had to go to New York because we had to get back to New York.
Yeah,
so it took off, but it wasn't a Mondale plane. So there were all these passengers on, right? But the girls, the cabin crew, weren't interested in any of the passengers because they'd also finished the campaign as well. And all these English and American journalists were on board who were buying loads of champagne. Mm. They just pulled the curtains halfway down the plane to where the Great Unwashed were, right? And they just closed the curtains and tied them.
Right.
And they didn't get any service, those people. And you could hear them rioting at the back, you know, where's the goddamn food? You know, where's the goddamn drinks?
Right.
And these girls were plastered because we'd
Very
been
funny.
Drinking for 3 or 4 hours and nobody wanted to know. And those passengers got off the plane and filed a record number of complaints about non-service on the plane.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
I once ended up flying to Boston with a
stewardess.
Boston. I was meant to be coming, but I was coming back from Atlanta, I think. And it was on an American Airlines flight.
Boston, Massachusetts.
You're quite right to say that the younger females were much more in evidence on the internal flights than they were on the international flights.
Absolutely.
It was all the old battle axes, right? Because they got seniority.
Yeah.
And I got chatting to this girl on the flight up from Atlanta to New York.
Yes.
And, you know, basically started chatting her up.
Yeah.
And I said, so where are you ending up today? And she's like, well, I've got to come to New York and then I'm going to finish up in Boston.
Mm.
And I said, oh, well, how long are you in Boston for? She's like, well, we're staying overnight in Boston. Mm. And I was like, okay. Mm. When are you coming back from Boston? She's like, well, I'm not really coming back to New York. I think I'm going from Boston somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I said, well, do you fancy going out for dinner then when we get to Boston?
Mm.
And she's like, yeah, but you're not going to Boston. You're going to New York. I said, yeah, but I could come to Boston. Mm. So I booked myself a flight to Boston.
Yeah.
And I took her out for dinner.
What, on her plane?
No, I couldn't get on her plane. I got on a different plane.
So what, you went to Boston just to meet up with an air hostess for dinner and...
And, you know, entertainment, what can you say?
And it worked out?
Did, yeah.
Well, that's another disgraceful example of your alley cat lifestyle and behaviour.
In those days, with an English accent and, you know, the haircut that I had and a skinny tie and a rather chic suit, there was a lot of that going on.
You took a hell of a risk there because that girl could have just been saying it to get rid of you and then you got to Boston and you suddenly... Well, they always put them up in 4- and 5-star hotels, didn't they, the air crews?
And that was where I met her.
So, I see,
Because nobody had a mobile phone. You couldn't go, what's your mobile phone number? I'll call you later.
No, and did you even bother with dinner?
Yeah, we had dinner.
You did have dinner.
Yeah, I think we went to one of those nice seafood places down by the down by the shore.
Copley Plaza.
I can't remember.
I know.
I remember there was a couple of Irish bars that I was told not to go anywhere near.
Right. Yeah.
Because they were collecting money for the IRA.
Oh yeah, I see.
And I thought better not go in there with an English accent.
Absolutely disgusting lifestyle again. Honestly, my favourite airline trip of all time has always been going out of New York daytime to LA.
Yes.
Because you fly right across the United States of America for obvious reasons. Uh-huh. But in daytime, and you see the glory of it below you.
You see the Grand Canyon.
You see the desert, you see Arizona, you see everything.
Yes.
And it's utterly magnificent. And then coming in on the West Coast, it's always puzzled me as to why the coast is the West Coast. I mean, they've got two coasts, got the East Coast and the West Coast.
Well, it's only because people on the East Coast refer to the West Coast as the coast.
The coast,
don't they?
That's right, we're off to the coast.
They don't really refer to the East Coast as the coast at all.
No, the Eastern Seaboard it's normally referred to.
Yeah, yeah.
But coming down into LAX, it's like when a plane leaves London here and goes to Spain or Mallorca. Every property below you has got a blue square in the back garden, which is a swimming pool.
Yes.
And then you know you're actually in LA. And that's the whole difference between the East Coast and the West Coast.
Yeah, although a surprising number of swimming pools on the East Coast as well.
Very few compared to LA.
True, but compared to, say, this country, I mean, you see a couple of swimming pools here.
Yes.
And it's very rare.
It is.
Whereas in America, I mean, I remember, you know, my then girlfriend when I was, you know, the woman who I later married.
Yes.
When I went to see her for the first time in her parents' house, they had a swimming pool.
Was that Connecticut?
In Connecticut. This is great.
Yeah. That's right,
You know, I actually know somebody who's got a swimming pool. I didn't know anyone in Britain had a swimming pool.
Absolutely. But but I did genuinely love the approach into LA because the climate and the temperature changed, and I'm not a great sun worshipper.
No.
But there is something terribly appealing about Pacific Coast Highway and Venice Beach and Santa Monica and all that, you know.
Also, when I was first in America, when you arrived at a place like LAX, which had such a kind of, you know, fantastical, you know, background, history, name, you know, you'd see people
panache,
flying out.
Glamour,
of it.
Yeah, all of that.
So glamorous. Yeah. And you just thought, this is great.
Yes, exactly.
I've now made it.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm flying into LAX.
This is where I want to be. Yeah. Mm. The problem was sometimes I liked American Airlines so much. Like, I mean, I don't just mean the one called American Airlines, but all American
Airlines.
Any American airline.
Yeah.
That I would usually get off them plastered. Mm. In fact, I'm amazed.
That doesn't surprise me.
No, I was amazed that I was let into some cities that I went to, you know, because I remember landing at Chicago once.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well,
but they were a lot more kind of sympathetic to that kind of behaviour.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, yeah.
Than they are now.
I think they are. And whenever you ask for a drink, you always got one. Nobody ever said you've had too much.
No.
Nobody ever said, "Oh, I think we've run out, sir," or anything like that.
No, which is what they say now.
That's what they say now. You could just get it, and you got it, and it was great. And also, I loved the, because I always flew club or business or something like that, and sometimes got upgraded to first.
Yeah.
And I loved the huge big seats that just went back. I don't like these new convoluted full flat-out beds and all that. I don't want any of that.
No.
I don't want it. I want the old-fashioned seats. Because then you always had a chance of sitting next to an attractive woman in business, but now you don't because you're diagonally opposite her.
That's all strange, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. Mm. So I don't want any of that, you know?
No.
The other flight...
Also, in those days, the planes that you got on were, I mean, they were in so much competition with each other that there were so many flights going all over the place.
That's right.
I mean, it was like getting on a bus after
a while. It was,
It was so easy.
Yeah. Now, getting down the Caribbean was always an experience because they had the little planes you're talking about tiny planes.
The little puddle hoppers.
Yeah, the puddle hoppers. And so when I had to, you know, famously I've told the story about how I was at Rudolf Nureyev's bedside when he died.
Yes.
You know, the last words with him, you know, Rudy, are you all right?
Some doubt has been cast on the story, of course.
I got 3 pages out of that.
I don't doubt it.
But the story is I flew by main big aircraft down from New York to St. Martin's.
Yeah.
Because what I was doing was I was meeting an Air France jumbo coming in from Paris with Rudy on board.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
So he comes
so he was
in.
He's going there to recuperate or to die,
He's going there to die. Mm. He had a place on St. Martin's, right?
Yeah.
So I get to St. Martin's and then, you know, take him off. And I think, this is great. I'm just going to follow him. And then I followed them, unfortunately, out of the airport, round the corner to the private airfield where they put him on a jet.
Yeah.
And they went off, and I thought
to another island.
Yeah, and it was a Learjet.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, I was a bystander, and by flashing a few greenbacks, US dollars, I found out from the plane had gone where it was going. It was going to Simbart.
Right.
So I said, right. I said, well, I need to get to Simbart, but I can't afford a Learjet.
Yeah.
It was all Daily Express money, and they would have bought at $10,000.
They probably would
to
have
Island Hop because it wasn't very far at all.
No.
And the guy said, don't worry. Mm. So he rang up his mate. His mate turned up, and I got onto the smallest aircraft you've ever seen in your life. Mm. I mean, there were two seats in it.
Right.
It was a trainer.
I see, he was just sitting up front.
It was a trainer.
Yeah.
That's what it was. It wasn't even designed for people to fly in, just for a man. It had two sets of controls.
Yeah.
So it was how to train people how to fly.
Right.
So he came in, did the deal, gave the guy $250,
right.
And whoosh, we were away. And 20 minutes later,
and
I was in
Simbart. Where could you stay there? Wasn't it a private island where you couldn't? Was there a hotel there?
No, hotels in Simbart.
Yeah.
Expensive hotels.
Yeah.
Wasn't as expensive then as it is now. I mean, now it's ultra expensive.
Yeah.
It's like McCartney territory at Christmas and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
you can even get into it, probably.
If you can even get into it. But I mean, you know, all the international models like Kate Moss, Sir Paul McCartney, they all end up there, you know, if they're not on Barbados, where they would be at the... where I've stayed as well.
Yeah, the place, the Sandy Lane.
Sandy Lanes, that's absolutely
stays.
Right. But anyway, we got down in Bart, and then, you know, it was a question of getting a hotel. And then it was a question, literally, of driving around, knocking on villa doors, trying to find out where Rudy was, and eventually tracked him down.
And that's
when I went over the wall, crept through the grounds.
Yeah, went in. You're lucky you didn't get shot.
Yeah, well, I didn't think they expected anybody to be there. You know, my rat-like cunning exceeded even my own expectations.
No.
And I got into his bedroom about minutes before the boy died. It was fantastic timing. It really was.
Incredible timing.
Yeah,
Some would say hard to believe.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But of course, I wouldn't be one of them.
No, of course not. No, absolutely.
But, I mean, if you've come anywhere near one of our live shows, you've probably heard that story. But we've got many more stories to tell and not any more time to tell them in this particular episode.
Is that right?
But episode 7 is out now, or will be out, if you've just heard it.
Yes.
Episode 8 will be next, and there will be more tales of our adventures in America.
Yeah.
We are the two mics.
We are. And they just closed the curtains and tied them.
Right.
And they didn't get any service, those people. And you could hear them rioting at the back, you know, where's the goddamn food? You know, where's the goddamn drinks?
Right.
And these girls were plastered because we'd
very
been
funny.
Drinking for 3 or 4 hours and nobody wanted to know. And those passengers got off the plane and filed a record number of complaints about non-service on the plane.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. So you went to Boston just to meet up with an air hostess?
Yeah.
For dinner
entertainment. What can you say?
And it worked out.
It did, yeah.
Well, that's another disgraceful
example disgraceful?
Of your alley cat lifestyle and behaviour.
In those days, with an English accent and the haircut that I had and a skinny tie and a rather chic suit, there was a lot of that going on. He should have lost one of his legs earlier, of course, because he was famously the guy that was run over by a snowplough.
While he was having sex in the street.
Having sex in the street outside of lanes.
Outside of lanes, in the snowdrift.
In a snowdrift.
Yeah.
Can't say I remember who the woman was.
No.